We may be grown women, but underneath we're just little girls, dreaming about being carried off by a prince on a white horse.
Tonight, we're continuing our Witch Night Extravaganza Month by talking about Anna Biller's 2016 horror satire, The Love Witch, which she wrote, directed, edited, produced, and scored. The film stars the stunning, almost otherworldly actress Samantha Robinson, who was pretty much unknown at the time, as Elaine Parks, a modern-day witch who has been recently widowed, who uses her powers to make men fall in love with her. Only her powers are almost always too intense for them, as it makes them feel too much in ways they aren't used to. And it leaves a wake of destruction as these men are consumed by love and desire and get destroyed in her wake.
Oh. I feel strange. Dizzy. What was in that drink you gave me?
Organic berries, vodka, hallucinogenic herbs.
The Love Witch is meant to satirize the fact that so much of our horror, thriller, supernatural, and just cinema in general is shot from the male gaze. Anna Biller points to a specific time period in the 1970s where cinema started to tailor so much of its horror and exploitation to the male gaze. As an avid watcher of classic cinema and someone who was inspired by Laura Mulvey's seminal 1975 essay, Visual Pleasure in Narrative Cinema, Anna Biller looked back to the 1920s to 1950s, what was sometimes derisively known as the woman's film.
It's because movies became very masculine starting around the early 70s. And, you know, these older films, one thing I loved from the time I was a very small child, I loved the gowns and the glamour. I loved all the female characters and all their witty dialogue. So I loved the pre-code movies and the noir films and, you know, the women's pictures. There were just tons of women's pictures, like all about Eve or, you know, Vertigo. They're all about a woman's experience in the world. I feel like I learned a lot about being a woman, you know, growing up into being a woman from these movies.
A genre of film which is best remembered as often starring huge stars like Joan Crawford, Betty Davis, and Barbara Stanwyck, even Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind. Rather than being action-driven, the women's film utilized romance, drama, escapism, and usually had a female protagonist. These films had their peak during the Great Depression and then World War II, when it was believed that in Hollywood that the primary audience for the movies was women who often needed to escape. It also harnessed psychoanalysis and the popularization of medical terminology and centered around women's issues, usually of family class and repression. In retrospect, film studies scholars have pointed out that these films spoke different visual languages to women and men. These elements would all become staples of soap operas, and the term woman's film would disappear for a while after the 1950s. Some famous examples are Gone with the Wind, Rebecca, Gaslight, Mildred Pierce, All About Eve, and Gigi. Elements of this genre would consciously appear again in films like Norma Rae, Grease, Thelma and Louise, and Titanic. The conscious stylization of the uniqueness of The Love Witch also reminds me of Charles Laughton's Night of the Hunter, a film that Anna Biller has talked about quite a bit on Twitter and put on her Letterboxd lists of films that inspire her. It's the filmmaking of an auteur who intrinsically understands horror as a genre and is happiest, consciously defying convention.
Not it's a male gaze. And then, you know, I think she revised, she made like a revision to her essay where she said, she actually included the women's pictures as movies that were for female visual pleasure, which she didn't in the first essay. And I think that's correct, because I think this is one reason I latched onto those movies, is because they were made for women and for female visual pleasure. So rather than, I think, like being a film student and having all this anxiety about, you know, it's sort of being politically incorrect to do glamour or to do all these things that may have seemed retrogressive. I just thought, actually, it's not retrogressive. What it is it's female. And it's not even necessarily like it's female in a bad way. It's just female. It's just about being a female. These movies are about what it is to be a female, and it's just all the different like kaleidoscopic aspects of it. So it isn't really whether it's about, for me, it's not about exploitation if I'm talking about myself, right? If I'm talking about myself, my own sexuality, my own interests, my own desires, that's not exploitation.
The Love Witch appears to take place in that gap between the 1950s and 1970s, carefully curated and stylized to appear to be a 1960s film, although that's never exactly established. It's both styled and colorized to look as if it's a Technicolor film from that era, with bright colors, red and vivid pink, often utilizing kaleidoscope and soft-filtered effects. Anna Biller wanted to use that double visual language, speaking to her own visual pleasure and desire, while also crafting this film to be far more terrifying for a male audience. It's especially notable how well she was able to do all of this, considering it was only her second feature film. Anna Biller's mother was a fashion designer, and her father was a visual artist, which clearly had a lasting impact on her filmmaking. After going to UCLA and then CalArts, where she studied film, specializing in 8 and 16 millimeter film, she had her feature film debut, Viva, in 2007, a sex comedy that was inspired by Playboy photos from the 1970s. She decided that her film would take those photos and create characters in a film based around them, satirizing and recreating the 1970s sexploitation genre. And starred Anna herself as a bored housewife who leaves her husband, is picked up by a madam, and brought through all the worst excesses of the 1970s sexual revolution. After releasing Viva, it took 7 years to write, direct, and release The Love Witch.
You said we need to give them what they want. Well, what do men want? Just a pretty woman to love and to take care of them and to make them feel like a man and to give them total freedom in whatever they want to do or be.
But what about what we want? How are we going to be equals with men if we keep catering to all of their needs?
I think that if you want love, you have to give love.
The Love Witch stars a pretty unknown cast. Samantha Robinson, John Keyes, Laura Waddell, Jeffrey Vincent Parisi, longtime Anna Biller collaborator Jared Sanford, Jennifer Ingram, and Robert Seeley. A lot of the cast have had guest spots on shows like NCIS, Supernatural, and General Hospital, which makes sense when you look at the fact that the woman's film genre was replaced by the serial soap operas on TV and radio. After her husband dies, the Love Witch, Elaine Parks, moves into a Victorian house in Arcata, California, a town that tolerates witchcraft, where she continues trying to use love magic to make men fall in love with her, leaving destruction in her wake when the magic ends up being too powerful for the emotionally stunted men she charms. After a professor she gave a hallucinogenic potion dies and she buries him with her urine and a used tampon, police begin looking into the strange death. The cinematography was done by M. David Mullen, who has previously done Jennifer's Body, Aquila and the Bee, Twin Falls, Idaho, and The Astronaut Farmer, as well as The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. It was one of the last films to cut an original camera negative and be edited on 35mm film without a digital intermediary.
Please, send me a beautiful, sweet man to love me as I love him. To love me. Love me. Love me.
Before I introduce the panel, please like this video and subscribe to the Movie Night Extravaganza YouTube channel. Then hit that bell to get notified whenever we're streaming. Super chats are now open. If you have any pressing questions, send us a super chat, which helps me maintain the expenses for the show, which I am obligated by the rules of the Geneva Convention to stop everything and ask the panel. Another way to help us out is to become a patron and give us money every month. In exchange, you get access to all of our after parties, bonus content, and we'll tell you even more movies we watched recently. Patreon.com/movie night extra. We have a Movie Night Extravaganza Discord. There's an invite link in the episode description, and we have a Letterboxd HQ account. So those are two more places to follow along with us. Okay, let me introduce the illustrious panel. We are live right now on This Space. If you aren't following them, join This Space TV on YouTube. Link below. Christina Oakes is a co-host of Movie Night Extravaganza, a streamer on Twitch, twitch.tv/cosmopolitics, a host at This Space, hosting Christina's Corner, and is across social media at Cosmopolitics and on Letterboxd at Christina. Josh Duggan is the co-host of the SVU podcast, Munch My Benson, as seen recently on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and the nostalgia-driven movie podcast, Unkind Rewind, which I was on recently talking about The Sting. Go watch it after this. I, of course, am your host and a lonely professor who's never felt love like this before, and I'm scared, Forrest Miller. Love, witch, baby.
Josh, welcome back.
Oh, thanks.
You see a faded sign on the side of the road that says 15 miles to the love.
Bitch.
But it's our good friend, Josh Dugan, from Unkind Rewind and Munch My Benson.
Yep.
Dude, that picture of Jimmy Kimmel where it's he has a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire thing, and then it says Munch My Benson, is like, that blew my mind. I was like, yo, I know that guy.
It's so weird. We still don't know how it happened. I know somebody who works on the show, but they did not write the clue. Oh.
And then he got canceled over it.
Oh, yeah, we got him canceled. Yeah. So that part was left out of the news, sadly.
Yeah,
because that would have brought more listeners. You know?
They were like anti-Trump SVU podcast.
I mean,
Munch by Benson.
That is an apt description.
Yeah.
I just realized I look like the original Broadway Wicked poster.
You kind of do. Totally. Yeah.
Wait, I wish I could change the. There's probably a way to change the colors. I could turn you green.
Oh, cool.
Nice. I mean, you could do it on your you can actually do it on your Brio, because you know there's the app. I don't know if you have the app, that the Brio app. You can actually change it to be green, and you can make yourself into the Wicked poster.
Nice. I'll do that when we cover Wicked for Oscar season.
But yeah, I like this movie a lot. I missed it. I missed it when it came out, and
this is the first time.
Yeah, this is my first. I've always meant to watch it. I've seen the pictures of it, and I've seen the love me part, but I completely, like, I don't know, I just blanked on it.
As a Tumblr girly, this film was everywhere on Tumblr when it came out. I was like, because I mean, again, Letterboxd one liner, so much Lana. This is a Lana Del Rey coded movie, so like, there's a lot of, you know, the day he left me was the day I died, you know, like so TikTok edits, like audio of like transformations and all that. It's so this movie has been in and out of my life, and I did see it when I found it on Tubi a few years ago, especially when I considered, like, oh, if we're doing witches, we should cover this movie because it's a very different witch movie.
Dude,
there's
even
different
when,
types of witches. There's blood. There's blood witches, love witches, green witches. You know,
green witches. This is a whole category. It's the one Kermit's in, I think. But no, there's even when I hadn't heard of this movie, right? I still had seen the screen grab, the Tumblr screen grab, where she was like, "Well, I'm back in the dating pool again."
Yeah, this was something that was really popular during COVID.
Yeah, it's definitely like super meme forward. Like it's almost designed to be memed, it feels like.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that's what's so cool about it. Like, it's, and also too, this is one of those, you know, it's inspired by a lot of other, like Bell, Book, and Candle, which was the first one that we covered this month. You know, it's very underrated, but when you look at the people who created this movie, it's like, oh yeah, this makes sense. Because when I first saw this movie, I thought this movie was like a film from like 1974 or something like that. Like, I felt like, oh, this is an old movie.
Yeah.
And then when I found out it was 2016, I'm like, more people should have cinematography like this. Like, even with The Apprentice, the Donald Trump, Roy Cohn movie, they made it they stylized the cinematography like a 70s, 80s documentary. Which I feel like not too many people are obsessed with urine yellow as a color base for cinematography. Yeah. Bring back color, bring back like classic looking
Well, there's a thing people have made so many jokes about with both Sicario and Breaking Bad, where it has that yellow tint to it, and they're like, "Oh, I guess we're in Mexico again because everything's yellow."
Yeah, because they really, in my opinion, if you're going to make a movie that takes place in a different time, you should make it look like a film from that time.
So the guy that the cinematographer, M. David Mullen, last movie he did, not that he didn't die or anything, he went to doing like prestige TV. So after this movie, essentially in like 2017, he started doing The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And that's like his, which shout out to Superman and Lois Lane for, but that's like his big project. But before that, one of the last films that he had done, I think it was the last film that he had done before this. He like, it's cool that like, he's one of those people that doesn't do projects all the time. But one of the last ones he had done is Jennifer's Body, which is another
movie. Yeah, which is getting a sequel now.
I don't know. But that's another movie that's like visually kind of a crazy thing, right? Like, and so he became known for doing these like, I don't know, like vibe aesthetics of different time periods as like his main thing. And then obviously The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel takes place in like the 50s, and like he did a whole thing with that too. Sorry, this dog's going crazy. I don't know if you guys can hear it.
A lot.
But yeah, Jack, when did you see it for the first time?
I saw
really it. Like it.
I lived in LA when I saw it for sure. I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it like when it was streaming. Yeah, I really dig this movie. I may be reading it wrong, but or reading it maybe not as the author intends, or auteur here. But yeah, the style is great. I think it's like just a full on comedy, basically. And everyone she kills is asking for it.
Yes.
I'm rooting for her to keep killing.
All right. So that's like, so you are reading it the way the author intended it. The interesting thing, I was watching a whole bunch of interviews that she's done. She's such a fascinating artist, Anna Biller. And she made a bunch of short films, which, the first big short film she made was written by Jared Sanford, who's the guy that's the creepy, very handsy, like wizard kind of guy that converts her, that it seems like sexually assaulted her. Like that's the vibe.
He's a rapey warlock.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So that character is actually her like collaborative partner, and actually runs Anna Biller Productions, like her production company. And essentially she makes movies every takes her like 7 or 8 years to get these movies together. Cause Viva, the first one she did, it was in 2007, and she was like the star of it, plus doing all the other things she did on this.
Yeah.
But I think I was watching a bunch of interviews with her, and she was talking about how visually and like textually she wanted men and women to each feel different about this movie. So she wanted men to feel like
uncomfortable,
uncomfortable. Like she wanted men to actually feel like this is a horror movie because it's being done to them. And she wanted women to watch this movie and feel a level of like both like, cathartic, like comedic relief, which is what maybe I'm female coded too. Cause like, I was like,
you're a feminist force. That's what it is. Okay.
She wanted women to feel both catharsis, and because it's her own, she was going off of her own visual pleasure. Like that was the central thing that she was.
And another thing too is, this also flips the script of like women ask for it when they're wearing clothes that are revealing. They might be flirting or they're drinking. So it does flip the script on that too, because we deal with that every day of our lives, unfortunately.
And she also was talking about how he sees this character as like a complete sociopath, but because of what's been done to her, right? Like because it's like
a good for her film.
Yeah. So it's like her sociopathy, I guess, towards these men, which I didn't even read it necessarily as sociopathy. Like it feels like she's giving love and then no one else can really handle it. But it does feel like it's they're asking for it in the sense that it's not like the only time that she actually kills a character. I mean, she kills her ex-husband, which, fuck that guy. But but like the only time she actually kills people is when they either leave her or they reject her. I don't blame her.
That's the most reasonable response for women, because men do it all the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if it's the most reasonable response, but it does feel like in this, like her husband like cheats on her, I think, and leaves her. And it's just like, I'm done. And like her husband sounds like an abusive piece of shit when you hear her memories back. I mean, she's probably an unreliable narrator, but
it's a voice, it's a VO flashback, and you hear his voice. Like,
yeah,
I think it's reasonable to assume that he definitely said those things. That he said she, you know, had let herself go and needed to lose weight and all of that bullshit.
Yeah, and that she didn't clean. She's like, I want to have people over. You don't clean the house. It gets incredibly abusive when she's in that mode. And then you hear her father. I assume that's her father. That's, you know, like, both sounding sexually charged towards her. And
per the cast in the post in the credits, it's her dad's voice.
Yeah. That's what I assumed. So in both cases, right? Like, this is like an incredibly abused person who finds herself through the through becoming a witch, right? Like, that's I mean, it's metaphorical, but it's like, you know, by becoming a witch, she owns her own sexuality, she owns her own femininity, and then she's able to, I mean, essentially become the man that, you know, that abused her. Like, she, like, the men in this movie are kind of just used and thrown aside. They're the used tampons, you know, in the jar.
I'm not a tampon guy. I wear pads. Anyway, I wear menstrual. You know what's so funny? When I was telling my mom about, like, menstrual underwear and all these other products, she's like, "Where was this when I was having my period?" I'm like, "Yeah."
Well, great. I guess it's good you're not a diva cup.
Oh God.
I tried doing that,
did not work out, because everyone's like, you know what's funny? Everyone's like, oh, you know, you only bleed like this this tiny amount every, like, a tablespoon amount every month. I'm like, not for me, it's more than that.
I really like the joke in this where the voiceover, Elaine's voiceover, says, a lot of men have never seen a used tampon, and then the two cops look in the ground and they go, and they're like, oh, what's this? And then he's like, I don't know, it looks bloody.
That's Chekhov's tampon.
This is why boys and girls watch that Shirley Temple puberty video in fifth grade now.
but in the same way, right? Where we're talking about how this movie has a different, you know, different sides for boys and, like, guys and girls. Like, you could see the bloody tampon and be like, oh, that's like this fucking disgusting. And then, you know, her speech about how, like, women bleed and that's just what happens. It feels like it reads differently, probably for guys and girls. It reads differently if you have a period and if you don't, right? Like,
yeah, it's like the times where it's like my dad's like, all right, what do you need lady stuff? Describe exactly what brand and what do they look like? Wings or no wings?
Yeah, I mean,
it is interesting that, you know, even to this day, I mean, we still don't know a whole lot about the female body. And I'm watching, like, male doctors on TikTok, like, educate other men about, like, what really goes on with the female body. And it's like, so many, even women are like, I'm learning something new every day.
Christina's in total love for this movie. Well, our sex ed in this country is, you know, it's in the
a joke
because we like, we're very parents first culture, right? Like, it's whatever the parents are offended by, that's what we go.
Well, yeah, we used to have sex ed. I actually had it. You guys may not have, but
I had my first menstrual cycle in January, like New Year's Eve, 2004 to 2005. My nurse's office didn't have menstrual products, and much later on we watched a health video about shaving. I was already shaving, or it was on my period. We learned about pregnancy in seventh grade, but not what causes pregnancy. It wasn't until 10th grade biology 1 honors we actually learned what makes babies. And I'm like, we're a little too late in STDs. We're a little too late. And my sister, who is a PE teacher who also does health in New Jersey of all places, parents have been opting their kids out of sex ed because they're learning about sex, they're learning about pregnancy, they're learning about addiction, drugs, STIs, and most of those kids are pregnant or on drugs, have STIs, so go figure.
Yeah,
yeah, well, that didn't happen in the 90s.
Oh, just even like in the 70s, right? Like, the 70s was when this kind of entire culture war, I mean, not that this necessarily
happened. Either Goddess Me Margaret got banned.
But there's a big culture war that happened during the Carter administration, where they believed that, you know, despite the fact that Carter was like a crazy evangelical guy, right? Like he was a born again Christian. He was our first born again Christian president. You know, at least the modern iteration of, like, the modern evangelical movement when it was just getting into politics. Like,
he didn't judge.
You know, he was tarred by religious right people as being like a, and that was like the birth of the religious right. It was, they called him like a secular humanist or whatever, like a there was supposed to be this big conference on the family, and they're supposed to like have all these different sides talking to each other, and they were supposed to establish guidelines, like national guidelines for something like sex ed, and it didn't happen because that was, you know, that was when all the craziest religious right people kind of started, because
they got in bed with Reagan.
Yeah,
they got in bed with Reagan right before he, like when he was still he'd run one time and not won the nomination.
Yeah.
And so they basically, they got in bed, and then they became, they basically fused with the Republican Party at that point.
And now men have never seen a used tampon.
So tampon before, yeah. That, I mean, when I watched it, I was like, I'm like, wait a minute. They didn't, I mean, they, in college, we learned how to put a condom on, but I'm like, but I don't remember in health learning, you know.
Well, there's a classic thing where they people will put it on a banana.
Even the elderly women are like, oh. But like, I don't think no teacher taught girls like in these classes how to put a tampon in or whatever. I mean, my mom did it for me, and I was like, oh, never again. Never, because you, no offense, but some people are like, I don't feel it. I felt it. Never again.
Which is why a movie like this works, though, right? Like a movie where that is completely about reclaiming your femininity, that does use something like, you know, both urine and a used tampon, as my name says, you know, used tampon.
Yeah,
and urine,
a lot of people find, you know, I mean, I find pregnancy gross and disgusting. I just watched the first episode of Welcome to Derry, and I'm reminded again, pregnancy is body horror. But a lot of people downplay how horrific a menstrual cycle is, and I feel like, you know, something like that, you know, that's very much part of being a woman, unfortunately, is doing this thing every month until we're in our 40s or 50s or pre-menopause or whatever. So you know, the representation of, you know, urine and a bloody fucking used tampon is like genius.
Well, there's the two sides to it. I think there's like the side of it that
pee, you know, and there's another hole, like
no, but there's the two sides to it of, yeah, that is a good joke. All right, I'll hang it up. But
people are like, surprised.
Where it's something natural that should be beautiful, right? It should be beautiful. It has to do with, you know, like, I mean,
other cultures, Forrest. I don't know if you know this, but Bailey Sarian, great murder mystery makeup, she did dark history on the culture of a woman's menstrual cycle. And in other cultures, women get, like back in the old days, in old, like, you know, nomadic cultures, women would have to take 5 to 7 days off in a nice hut, be pampered, be taken care of. And I'm like, yo, if women can get maternity leave,
yeah, we don't even give good maternity leave.
Like, women should have menstrual leave. Like, yeah. I mean, these other countries are doing a good job. Oh, my mom's in chat.
But
I was just telling hey mom, I was just telling everyone the first time you tried to put a tampon in me was not fun.
But yeah, so the plot of the Love Witch, you know, getting on track, right? She's driving up to Arcata, California, which is, you know, near Eureka, which is where
Richard Nixon on the same bay. From. Yeah, it's what, Humboldt Bay, I think.
Yeah, it's where Nixon comes from. You know, so she's moving up there. Her husband has just died, and you see him drinking something, and, you know, drinking the potion, and then he goes, and, you know, you see her eyes, and she gets pulled over by the cop, which is the cop that's, you know, that she later meets on the trail. And she rents a room in a building owned by her mentor Barbara, maintained by an interior decorator Trish Manning, who invites her to a tea room where they're surprised by a visit from Patricia's husband Richard, who becomes besotted with Elaine. So, you know, thoughts on this, the beginning of this?
I mean, I love the PCH, especially in NoCal. Like, so starting, it's odd to me that she's coming south towards Arcata on the PCH.
I bet you that's a goof she'd be coming on the IMDb page.
Yeah, because she'd be coming, like, I've been there, and she'd be coming from, because she was living in San Francisco, she should be coming the other way, but whatever.
Yeah, she makes it sound like she's going up among the redwoods.
Yes. Yeah. And then actually going down from the Oregon coast or whatever. But
it also shows how, you know, like, men could be so taken by her. I mean, not because of her powers, but, you know, as you mentioned in the intro for us, you know, how otherworldly she looks. Like, she's got these, like, hypnotic big brown eyes and, like, a very neutral expression a lot. And it's like, you know, she could be considered like a regular brunette, but she's really like with big brown eyes, but she's not. There's just something about her that's very, like, she almost fits the cinematography used in this movie. Like, this is probably like one of the few films she's actually done, and it's like, I can't picture her in anything else. She just looks like someone who belongs in this, like, ambiguous time period of the past, perhaps.
Wait, do you know what the other movie that she's in is?
What
is it? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, she's Abigail Folger, which I was asking in the chat earlier with you guys. I was like, do you think Tarantino's seen The Love Witch?
There's no way. He absolutely cast her because of this.
Feet.
Yeah.
Feet. Anyway.
So she performs a ritual to attract a new lover. Local professor Wayne accepts her offer to cook him dinner at his cabin. She has him drink a concoction of hallucinogens and they have sex. He becomes emotional and delirious, which repulses Elaine. The next morning, Wayne has died. She buries him along with a bottle containing her urine and a used tampon.
She's got a thing.
They found a guy that's like, I feel like that guy feels like he fits in this time period, like, explicitly. Yeah. Like, it's hard to imagine that guy being anything that's not like this, or like Mad Men, or like something at least that takes place. Yeah.
This is weird, though, because it's technically in present day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, well, like, it's out of time. It's in this weird, like,
yeah, it's out of time.
Because it's shot like a Technicolor film, but, like, there are main cast members who are driving contemporary Honda Accords.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
but even the outfits, like, look very.
But yeah, the wardrobe is absolutely total throwback to the Technicolor films. You know, like, she said she was heavily influenced by, like, 50s era Hitchcock. You know, the color stuff, and it makes total sense. Like, you watch this and you're like, no, this looks like a fucking Hitchcock. This looks like North by Northwest or To Catch a Thief or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I found that this is a clip talking about, Bell Book and Candle, which is 1950s, but it's like, you know, right before this time period. This is Annabelle at Fright Fest.
Did you watch any late 60s sort of like horror exploitation for any ideas?
Yeah, I watched some Hammer films, you know. Right. I love the movie Horror Hotel, that's early 60s.
Right.
And I love Burn Witch Burn. I mean, Bell Book and Candle is actually even more of an influence than
Novak,
all of those Hollywood films, those noir films really are. They're all about female glamour being bewitching. Mm. And so Love Witch is about how bewitching the female is and how that kind of destroys men. And that's just really, that's all classic Hollywood all the way.
How long did it take you to do it? Was it years of film? And when were you actually...
No, I filmed it in 8 weeks.
Right.
It was pre-production that took forever. Because it looked literally, the Renaissance costumes, you said, you know, that scene, those costumes took me a full year.
You got your friends doing
it.
I didn't.
I sewed every hem, you know, every... Oh
my God, it's just staggering.
It's just so much, it was so much work. You know, but this was during the time that I was ill,
right.
And I couldn't actually do anything else at the time. I couldn't move very much, and I could go even maybe nauseous to go to the ironing board. So I had to plan my time, like sitting and doing it. This machine didn't make me ill, but standing up made me sick. So I had to limit my time cutting and ironing. It was really hard, but I thought, well, what else am I going to do at this? I want to progress on making my film, so I'm going to do what I can.
Is there an anti-female thing here as well? Did you find that while you were making this?
I didn't have that problem in pre-production. I have that problem a little bit with some of the press and some of the audience. And I don't think that's because I'm a woman, as much as because the script was written by women and it was directed by women. It has a quality to it that is not necessarily what a man would do, and that it's this alien a little bit for a lot of men to have like a female lead character and that she's glamorous. That's already silly for some people. It's been like, what, it's been like 40, 50 years since we've had like an actual femme fatale on the screen that wasn't just like, I mean, it's not like Fatal Attraction where she's not, that's not a glamorous character. But we've had a glamorous femme fatale on the screen. It was before that.
Kathleen Turner in Body Heat and all these sort of things, surely.
But how long ago was that?
You're right. That's 25 years at least, isn't it?
I was actually trying to make a modern movie, and this is so sad because I really can't, I guess. It's as modern as tell audiences, this is as modern as I get, you know, this is it.
Oh, I think her and Robert Eggers would get along real well when it comes to yeah, like, I don't really want to make a modern movie. Like the most modern Eggers would go, he said, would be like the '50s, and I'm into that.
We just talked about that. All right. So when Trish leaves town for a few days, Elaine seduces Richard. They have sex, but Elaine demands they stop seeing each other when Richard becomes clingy and emotional. Richard is such a pathetic character. And I think
they're all dorks, except well, the first two are dorks, and then what's his fuck is Griff. Griff is just that like classic detached man who won't engage with his emotions. But the two who will engage with their emotions are
By the way, has she made another movie up? She's working on one.
She wrote a novel also.
Yeah, which was published by Verso, apparently.
Okay.
The leftist publisher.
Nice.
Her husband is the revolution. Her husband is the
Robert Greene.
Yeah, he wrote that 48 Laws of Power book that literally every financial fucking dork on Twitter and incel guy puts it in their must read list. I was kind of surprised. Yeah,
and The Art of Seduction. He also wrote a book with 50 Cent, the 50th law.
She does have some. Anna Biller has some problematic things. She, as I dug into her, she is apparently a TERF.
It doesn't surprise me.
She looks like a TERF.
As soon as you said,
I have a screenshot of a tweet that she did in 2018 that it's a response to somebody, but it's the last frontier in the war against women take away their special status as childbearers and mothers and the right to claim the status of being a woman at all.
British women,
the ideology better now.
British
women.
Sorry, but British women love posting that.
It's British like a copy pasta at this point.
Yeah, British women post that, like J.K. Rowling type people.
Oh yeah,
they love that quote.
Well, and washed up British male comedians and writers like Graham and Ricky Gervais. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
I fell into a weird rabbit hole area of the internet, and she also said, once I went down a deep satanic panic rabbit hole and I learned that the children/toddlers in the McMartin daycare center had STDs and genital scarring, there really were tunnels, etc. The perpetrators weren't charged because they couldn't prove which adults abused them. And I've looked into the McMartin daycare thing.
Nothing happened.
Nothing fucking happened.
Nothing.
Not a fucking thing. I don't understand how you could read anything about McMartin
and believe
that something happened.
Yeah, what's funny too is the reason, and this is interesting, the reason why that satanic panic about childcare daycare workers happened was because moms were getting into the workforce. They were leaving their kids home with strangers. And so I can't believe, I think maybe COVID broke her brain. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I don't.
British women, red flag.
Well, she's American though, isn't she?
Yeah, she's American.
Her mom's Hawaiian.
She has a transatlantic type of accent though. It always
She does.
Yeah.
Her mom.
Half Japanese and Samantha half Robinson grew up mostly in the UK.
Yeah.
And she moved. I think she moved here. She said when she was really young. Though.
She was born in the U.S.
I wonder how much Lana Del Rey she listened to, because it sounded like her voice sounded very Lana Del Rey esque.
I watched an interview. I watched an interview with her and another woman that had a podcast, because it was probably pretty easy to book her on a podcast. After this, because this is the first movie she had done, or the first big movie she had done.
Yeah.
And I heard her voice, and it was her voice is pretty similar to the. Like, I thought she was doing an accent for this, but it's not exactly. But when Wayne's reported missing, Officer Griff Meadows and his partner, Steve, he kind of mistreats his partner, Steve, but discover Wayne's body.
What, by punching him?
But also, he's like, get me a sandwich when he's going to.
Well, because he got a promotion.
Yeah.
Because so now he's now they were partners, but like now he can boss everyone around because, you know, he's a white guy who probably didn't earn his promotion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the beginning, he's doing doing traffic stops. He's like,
yeah, and he didn't know what a bloody tampon was, so he shouldn't.
I don't know what a bloody tampon is. And his partner Steve discover Wayne's body at his cabin, along with the bottle, which leads him to Elaine. Griff invites Elaine to join him in horseback riding. They come across a midsummer solstice festival held by the leaders of Elaine's coven. They propose a mock wedding. A hand fasting ceremony is performed where Elaine and Griff are gifted matching rings. Elaine realizes she's in love with Griff, though he does not reciprocate her feelings, which is the first time in this movie, right, that a person
man
does not
reciprocate. Captivated by her.
Yeah. And you know, the last two guys, the first guy is she seduces Trish's husband, as we said. And, you know, that's kind of the biggest asshole move in this whole movie, right? Because like, Trish is like her frumpy British friend.
But I would say that Trish is asking for it and got exactly what she deserved because she told Elaine that her ideology wasn't feminist enough and that it was upholding the patriarchy. And so if you're being the scold, if you're being the feminist scold here and telling another woman that she doesn't get to like live life however she wants, I mean, aren't you asking to have your husband taken away?
Yeah. I mean, I get like, you know, if we're looking at this from an ideological perspective, right? Elaine is a lot.
Well, I'm just looking at this, as like Elaine. I think Elaine's right.
I don't know. Trish is kind of, like the whole conversation they have where she's like, but isn't that upholding the patriarchy? She's the most kind of annoying character in this whole movie.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
She's annoying also. So that's why she should also have her husband taken.
But Richard commits suicide in the bathtub and is discovered by Trish. Trish confides in Elaine that she suspects Richard was having an affair and that his paramour drove him to suicide. Which I love that his suicide like this whole thing is he's drinking those like little bottles of liquor that he has or whatever. And he's like, she's like, I'm about to get upstairs and take a sleeping pill. And he's like, leave me alone, bitch. Like, I don't know. You know, 10 years of fucking dealing with Trish would probably break me the same way.
Yeah. Maybe like suicide is the only reasonable option at this point, you know?
Well, the only time Trish is happy is when she's actually when she is embracing what Elaine has suggested. Yeah. You know, the only time that she's like confident in her own skin is when she is wearing Elaine's getup, you know?
Yeah. Like essentially wearing Elaine like a mask almost, because Elaine, you know, like my ex-girlfriend with a borderline personality disorder, Elaine has a whole room full of like the craziest wigs you've ever seen that like flow.
Of course, flow you have a type. Because I myself have borderline personality disorder.
And wigs.
Yeah.
But
Uh-oh. Watch out. Don't
I haven't, you know, I haven't I haven't met anyone but you with that Barack the Vote shirt. So so Trish puts on Elaine's ring and Elaine forgets to retrieve it before leaving, so she brings it to Elaine's apartment, where she tries on Elaine's wig, makeup, and lingerie before discovering a shrine dedicated to Elaine's deceased lovers. At least she has a shrine. That's nice of her. I don't know. Like, if I feel like if I OD'd in front of somebody, and you know, I don't think they'd make a little shrine for Richard among them.
Yeah, I mean, is it a shrine or a trophy? I don't know.
Probably
six and one half dozen of another, right?
Yeah.
Elaine returns and is attacked by Trish, who leaves, swearing Elaine will burn for what she has done. And, you know, of course...
Nothing wrong. What are you talking about?
I like Elaine's whole thing where she's like, crash, 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 crash. It doesn't work, though. Maybe Trish is magic. Maybe Trish is so dull that she's magic-proof.
Like
she's like one of those Harry Potter characters. She's like the Dursley family in Harry Potter.
Well, we don't know that she doesn't crash and die.
Well, she gives the...
We never see her again, do we?
That's true. But she at least makes it to the... She's trying to get her to crash before she...
They're called squibs, by the way. They're called squibs. People who can't do magic.
But she makes it to the... She at least makes it to the police station, which is what Elaine's trying to stop her from doing.
Well, aren't they saying that was the... because I thought they said that her last name was Manning, who went to the police. So was that the woman who had lunch with the?
No, her name's Trisha Manning.
Weird. Okay.
Because her husband.
I thought Richard's last name was something else, but I.
They might not have the same last name. Yeah, but Richard Manning. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Dick Manning. You know? Griff tells Steve that their bosses ordered them to drop the case. When Steve inquires about the Jimson weed found in Wayne's system, Griff responds that Wayne was known to experiment with drugs. Steve reveals that Elaine's late husband, Jerry, died of an overdose despite having no previous history of drug use and accuses Griff of letting his feelings cloud his judgment. Griff punches Steve and storms off. See, he's like, there's definitely like a male-female dynamic in a way to like their partnership where it's like, you know, like Griff is like the alpha male asserting himself over like the guy that he's like, beat me a sandwich, you know, like.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, I just lost it.
Definitely not Chelsea Manning.
Well, that's what made me lose my thought was the Chelsea Manning comment.
Oopsies.
Elaine meets Griff at the cabaret. The police have DNA evidence linking her both to Wayne and Richard, as well as items linking her to Richard's suicide. Elaine claims she simply buried Wayne in accordance with her religious customs. That's a great excuse. She uses it multiple times. She's like, what? That's just my religion. Man, killing men is my religion.
I mean, you could get away with it now. Vaccine exceptions for religion are skyrocketing now. I can just say, hey, you know.
Just got polio. It's not my fault. After a night of lovemaking, overhearing the exchange, other patrons assault Elaine, chanting, burn the witch. Griff fights them off, and they flee. But it goes back to the old thing, right? Like, do we create witches, or do they create themselves, right? Like, when you shame a woman
did
like
they
that.
They make a deal with the devil to gain their powers or something. Because I think that's what they did with Angelique in the Dark Shadows soap opera.
Well, and you literally see the, her Jared Sanford guy, the name of two different, is the Jared Fogle and Mark Sanford.
you literally probably intentionally
with well, that's the actual name of the guy.
Was he hitchhiking?
His parents prenamed him after Jared.
Yeah, yeah.
Was Mark Sanford tracking down the Appalachia? Yeah, he was, whatever. Yeah.
He was the guy that was cheating on his wife and was like,
"Oh, I know, he was my governor."
The story was that he was going to Argentina, right?
Mm-hmm. He was walking to Argentina.
Walk in Argentina to see his mistress, but he didn't have that part. He was my governor. I remember that was like the biggest scandal for like
scandal. It was only a big scandal because he was like close friends with Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. So they were like trying to pin that on Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And it's post Larry Craig, right? Isn't that right in the wake of Larry Craig and the
if you
fly through the Minneapolis airport, you can check into that bathroom, BT Dubs.
I mean, I've gone to the Minneapolis airport, so I've probably been in
there. You've been there this year, I think. So you missed out on your chance to check into the Larry Craig Memorial bathroom.
He's probably still in there.
Ooh, boy.
At the apartment, Elaine presents Griff with a concoction that he tosses to the floor. See, he's the one person that's ever rejected her, besides her husband, right? That we actually see in the plot. That go make me a Subway sandwich. Elaine sees a vision of her past victims professing their love. She achieves an atheme, I don't know if that's how you say it, and stabs Griff multiple times, mirroring a painting on her wall, clutching the bloody atheme to her chest. Elaine smiles, imagining a mock wedding in which Griff declares his love and proposes to her before leading her away astride a unicorn, which is the description of the thing, you know, earlier in the movie where she's like, oh, I'm looking for my man on a white horse. And it's you saw a picture in this your apartment.
You saw a painting that you painted?
Yeah, you saw the painting.
I think that we're meant to believe she painted, right? That's the one she was painting? Yeah, because she was painting the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's her. She's having a vision of it throughout the thing. Which is
have a vision.
Well, she says
she got her happy ending, right? His heart.
Yeah, literally. And she can carry it around.
Speaking of happy endings, guess what massage parlor in my town got busted again? Just kidding.
I still remember walking through Philly, and then I sent you the thing that was like, there was like the massage parlor that I forget what it was called, but it was like it had like the sketchiest name.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, prostitution rings do happen in that place, probably.
Well, right after we had that conversation on that after party, there was in Hyde Park down the road from me, there was a massage parlor that got busted. So we had that whole, we were joking around about Chewbacca working in a massage parlor. Somehow that came up in the after party. And and
I'd right love out, to know like, how that came up.
We were was it a Star Wars after party? I think.
Yeah, it was a Star Wars after party.
I hope it wasn't.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you guys want to do an after party tonight. We can, but
oh, I'm maybe, down the clown.
Yeah.
All right, let's do an after party after this. So so that's the plot of the movie.
I thought of what escaped me. So when his partner tells him that her ex-husband had no history, that had never used drugs, it's like, bro, you can't say that with any you can't say that with any degree of confidence. You can't say this guy you've never met. I mean, even if you had met him, you can't say that this guy had never done a drug. Like,
Wait, Josh, what's a drug? I've never heard of such a thing. Okay, I'm sober. I've never drank, never smoked, never popped a pill that wasn't a prescription.
I've never.
It's like, I've never done anything wrong in my life.
Yeah. I like the scene where you know, she uses her eyes, she bewitches people, obviously, and she bewitches that professor pretty much. And
I don't think she needs a drugs to do it, honestly.
Yeah, I know that guy was just horny as fuck.
The potion, I don't think she needs a potion to
bewitch. But when she's just like, wait, before we have sex, drink this, and he's like, what's in it? And she's like, I made it, which is like, I'm sorry, I'm stopping that conversation, and I'm like, what's in it? You know what I mean?
Well, but
like,
this is a turning of the tables. Men have never had to worry about
what's in this drink.
What's in a flask or what's in anything.
Don't let
we could take a drink handed to us and ladies. Not presume that we're trying to be dosed and raped.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, my sister recently went out. I think she was in New York City. And this one guy just randomly, you know, someone was like, here, this guy gave me a drink. And this guy came up to her. He's like, has anyone heard you look just like Britney Spears? And my sister's like, I've gotten Cameron Diaz, but never Britney Spears in my life. Also, here's your drink back. I'm sorry, but even one time my sister went to the bathroom and her friend was watching her drink and my sister had the rest of her drink and she did not feel fine at all. So it's like, you gotta look at the drink so that nothing happens. You can't just have your back turned for 1 second, or it's crazy.
Yeah. So since this is like the second to last, because we're gonna do weapons on Friday. So it's the second to last. We kind of do this every time. I feel like we cover a theme on like a Halloween thing, right? I always look out for it. This is Annabelle talking about the figure of the witch.
Mm-hmm. This relationship between Elaine and like the witch figure, because they're both pretty complex figures that have a lot of different meanings projected on them by other people, and perhaps have their own power. So Elaine, you know, is in some ways extremely powerful, but she spends so much time like contorting herself into a pleasing fantasy. And you've talked about the witch in other interviews. The figure of the witch is similarly complex, is maybe offering limitation power. So I was curious if you could talk a bit about the relationship between these two sort of complex figures.
One thing I was trying to do in The Love Witch is actually, you ask what there is for men, is try to explain to men what it's like to be a woman, because I don't think they get it. So I think that, you know, men are looking at women mainly from the outside and not really as humans in some way. And so there's this so I think of like a witch from the outside is like a male point of view, a witch from the inside is a female point of view. So I'm trying to do a female point of view. So like to create a witch from the inside. So I think there's this concept among men that women have it really easy, especially beautiful women, because they can get any man they want. And so I see so little in cinema from the female point of view of what it's like to date or to be out in the world. And there's just so much judgment of women who conform to beauty standards, and they're mocked relentlessly for being shallow or a stuck up or a bitch. And I think there's even more ridicule of women who refuse to conform to beauty standards or to please men. And so I created these two characters, Elaine and Trish, and each character makes a different choice and each thinks they're safe, but neither character is safe because each is stuck in a world where only male desire matters. So Elaine, who tries to please men, can get any guy she wants, but none of the men are worth it because they'll objectify her and or they dominate her, and there's no space for her personality to grow or for her to self-actualize or for her to actually even love them. And Trish is secure in herself with a devoted husband, but her husband goes for like a blank sexualized image of a woman, which is all Elaine gives him, rather than a real woman. And I think women have been called witches because men don't understand them and their sexuality and power and everything else about them that makes them interesting is been seen as evil for thousands of years. So this is kind of an attempt to write, it's like, it's about time that witches started writing their own stories, you know?
Yeah. So I guess,
Kitty,
I guess I'd like to ask about, we touched on this a little bit before, but sort of the tragedy of her background of sexual abuse is explicitly signaled. And then we have this predatory Gayen character who suggests her adoption of witchcraft hasn't really allowed her to escape from patriarchal power. So I'm curious, for you, is she more of a tragic figure than a source of horror? Or is it more about this productive tension between those two?
Yeah, I think it's about the tension between the two, because, you know, I think she's tragic because she's a woman stuck in patriarchy with no way out, but that she's also a source of horror because she's a sociopath. But, you know, I imply in the film that it's her experiences with men which have made her a sociopath, and that she could reform if she had some real love or real understanding. So I think in the end, it is more tragic in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, she's right, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it is like even just the figure of her, you know, of the guy, you know, the Jared Sanford guy that, I forget, he has like a weird name, but like in the movie, but Gayen, yeah. But like even that character, right? Like she's able to become a witch because of this incredibly creepy, like gropey, like guy that seems every time he touches her, she like, you know, she pulls back and everyone's kind of naked around him. And
well, I mean, because like, he basically sexually assaulted her in front of all of these people before.
Yeah. So like even being reminded of like where her witch powers come from, which, you know, the powers are kind of she's able to channel her own version of like femininity, which even then is kind of questionable because, you know, Barbara and him, which Barbara doesn't stop her from getting sexually assaulted either. And that Barbara character, right, they're both like, well, men and women are different. And, you know, where you get your actual power from is your sexuality. And we're teaching like sex magic. And she's like, oh, you guys are still teaching that, which presumably that's kind of how she got into the entire thing. So her assault is like at the center of her transformation into a witch even.
Because she met Barbara at the burlesque club, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think
it's in San Francisco.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know.
Cat on my lap.
It's like she can't even get away from it, you know, when she's like in her, because she's reborn, I guess, as a witch essentially, but she can't even get away from it when it's the guy that, you know, he's constantly touching her and like touching everybody, really.
Oh, Anonymous, thanks for the 13-12 tip. Hey, I know what that means.
What, fuck the police?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, 13-12. But yeah, so there's like that side of it, which makes her even more of a tragic figure. Like her rebirth, her like, you know, her powers come out of an assault, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, we do not shame her for doing what she has to do. It's almost like an Eileen Wuornos situation. Like a lot of people are realizing that, you know, She was simply defending herself. I mean, sex workers deal with shit like that all the time. I mean, she came from a really awful, you know, childhood background, like most, I mean, some serial killers. But, like, I mean, her story was so...
Yeah.
We were going to do that movie, like, right? But
I'm also pro Eileen Wuornos.
Yeah. Yes.
We were going to... We had somebody that made a movie or something about the Eileen Wuornos story that contacted us, and then...
Who worked on Monster, yeah.
Yeah, and then...
Okay. But we never heard back from them.
Yeah, we ended up not... I don't know. I think we never heard back. They were trying to schedule an episode, which is... It's not rare that people reach out trying to schedule an episode, but, like, you know, it's
unusual. It's rare to not follow up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing
ever. It's happened a couple times. But did we not get to anything? Or did we get to everything?
That, I mean, when I was looking at, like, you know, did you know, there's, like, only, like, three facts that you covered. And it's, like, you know, again, this whole movie kind of almost does go under everyone's radar. And I feel like it was popular, you know, because of, you know, girlies like myself on Tumblr memeing about it. But also, too, it's, like, available to stream for free on Tubi.
Yeah, I mean, for once, there's very few movies, I feel like, and I think it might be because it's from 2016.
I wonder what's going on in 2016, if my memory is correct.
It's very rare that on Tubi, election? 1080p, which is, like, one of my big, you know, I get frustrated sometimes with Tubi, like, even watching Bell, Book, and Candle on there, it was only 720, and it's, like, some of the most beautiful parts of it on my computer. It was, like, it was hard to, like, see it in all of its glory. But this movie is 1080p.
I will say there aren't many films that you can watch where the filmmaker has blogged incessantly about it.
Yeah.
Because she has a blog called Anna's Blog, Musings About Film and Culture, and she's blogged a lot about different aspects of this. And I know she sort of bristled at the... She generally has an issue with, from what I can tell, with feminism being incorrectly applied to certain things being labeled as feminist when they're not. And I don't know that she would consider this feminist.
Yeah. I mean, I think she would consider it a movie made by a woman.
Sandrist.
About women's, like, women's
visual. About femininity, surely, but yeah. not about, like, I think it's more about the
movie.
It's more about the gays, like, G-A-Z-E, not G-A-Y-S. Yeah,
I'm surprised they've never gotten her to go on Red Scare.
I know, she would be a perfect fit.
Yeah, I feel like she and Dasha and Anna would get along. I don't know. She comes off as someone that has a lot of thoughts. Like, you know, like,
yeah, you don't want to dig too much into the Twitter history. That's for sure.
Yeah, but I mean,
and she deletes a lot of bad takes, too. That,
I mean, imagine her seeing this podcast. Hey.
I mean, she's welcome to come on the podcast anytime. Sorry we called you a turf.
I've said that she's been labeled that.
Yeah.
I mean, she sounds like one, so
yeah.
She looks like one.
To be fair, I don't know how you could misread the McMartin daycare scandal
or any of those cases.
But the McMartin specifically, it's like how,
like, no one got arrested for that one.
Like, what the fuck?
It was like an elderly couple who ran that place, I think, right?
Well, they were blaming. There was also a grandson that was supposed to be the prime culprit, but it's such hogwash. That's basically because, like, this completely unqualified psychologist, was implanting his hysterical memories in these children. Yeah.
Yeah, I know how many episodes of Law and Order SVU's rehashed those types of stories.
Oh, trust me, that's why I've talked about it.
My mom would love your podcast.
She's more than welcome to listen. It's we're back and dropping new episodes again.
Yeah, so. You guys are back. I was gonna say, like, there's an uncomfortable amount of people that believe Pizzagate. Like, even after people went to the fucking restaurant and they were like, "There's no child sex dungeon down here," they still
we've had to talk about Pizzagate, like, also.
So it's like I'm just not surprised anytime it's like, oh, a big name person believed, like, X and Y that, like, clearly isn't true. And it's like, an uncomfortable amount of people are still pushing Pizzagate. It's like,
I mean, I know someone. I mean, COVID. I mean, instead of the whole QAnon, whatever, they should have went down the Free Britney rabbit hole instead. Do you know how world peace if everyone just went down the Free Britney rabbit hole? But like, it's so funny too because like I know people who
you see Netanyahu and I know and, like, the leaders of Hamas, and they're both like Free Britney.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
What do we all agree on? World peace, baby. Let's go. Fuck K-Fed. Justin Timberlake. But it's funny too because it's like I know people who are like, you know, Elvis Presley is still alive and he's Donald Trump. I'm like, but they were alive at the same time. He died young, or that The Weeknd is really Michael Jackson. I'm like, you really think Michael Jackson is The Weeknd? He would not have gotten plastic surgery to make
he's his the skin lighter.
He would never have gone without hair for that long either.
Exactly. Like I'm like, think. I do. Armageddon is happening, and I'm just like,
oh, I do God. Really. I every time I think of The Weeknd,
people stayed home for 2 weeks and lost their goddamn minds and wanted to go back to work and get their nails done. And I'm like, why? I took 2 weeks off. I did a few apartment projects. I watched all of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia up until that point. It was great. I was like, can I have 2 more weeks off?
Uncut Gems kind of down
so much.
Yeah, that lockdown was fun. But lockdown could have gone the other way for me.
People were baking bread and streaming.
Well, I quit drinking for the lockdown because I knew that was going to get me into like, you know, like as soon as the lockdown happened, I was like, all right, I'm not going to drink. So I didn't drink for a year and a half during the lockdown. I was like, because I knew that for a fact that would get me into like some dark places.
And how are we still talking? How are you alive after not drinking for a year and a half?
But like that was my lockdown plan. We should talk about this at the after party. I do have so she collaborated Anna Biller collaborated closely with M. David Mullen. So to create the hard style lighting characteristics of classic Hollywood films, they use diffusion filters on the lenses for certain close-up shots, a kaleidoscope lens, which is cool as hell, was for the entire drug trip sequence. And then they use rear projection photography.
For all the driving scenes.
That was supposed to be like a tribute to the birds, I guess.
I remember watching the birds and I don't know why we read like a play version of the birds in my English one textbook in ninth grade. And then we watched the movie and it traumatized my class. And I'm over here like Hitchcock, yeah.
I sent you and Conan pictures when there was that nor'easter recently, and somehow I was trying to figure out why this was the case, but there was like I saw dozens and dozens and dozens of seagulls and cormorants, which are those big black seabirds, and I was trying to figure out like where the fuck I have like, these videos of so many of them. I was kind of getting freaked out because of the birds.
This was
just like a couple weeks
ago. It's like when you go to Maine on vacation and you're afraid of Jaws.
Yeah, well, but like there was just so many, like I've never seen that many birds. And then I realized that the nor'easter had blown, because I was like around a mill pond, it had blown all the fish into the mill pond. So the whole thing was covered in fish, and there were after party. Yep. Saying, yep.
Yeah, maybe craving an after party. I can just tell.
Yeah, well, you
know. Yeah, man, an after party since the first of the month, I think.
Well, no, we did one for The Witch. We did our longest after party ever for The Witch, but.
Yeah.
Can you please pronounce it correctly, Forrest?
The Vavitch.
I needed to hear you say it.
You want to go to Letterboxd one-liners?
Yes, I'm excited for this one. So, Letterboxd is a platform, a place where film lovers, film haters, film curious gather with it to each other to discuss the films they love, didn't love, the films they made a lot of references to Lana Del Rey. There's a lot. I was like, enough already. It's bottom of democracy. It's just not the Siskels and Ebert's of the world. Everyone gets to chime and opine, and everyone's a critic, especially these days. So without further ado, seriously. Don't get me started on white folks and sinners these days. Here are the Letterboxd one-liners for The Love Witch Baby.
I'm happy we did the sinners episode before people started deciding they hated it.
I know. This is how I imagine Lana Del Rey living her life.
It really is. Like, yes. There's the right amount of like, I don't know, like female empowerment, but also like just kind of rejection of feminism at the same time. That like it really is how I imagine Lana Del Rey living her life.
She did curse Donald Trump back in 2016, so that's fun. She's a witch.
I Do we think that Elaine just needs to find her alligator king?
Yes,
that might help. Yeah, she's like they're both like Pearl in that way.
Yeah. I want her to find her alligator king. I want Elaine to be happy.
I'm not staying on this farm.
Thinking about it, really, it is kind of like Pearl, where like she needs to find someone that was fine with her feeding people to alligators.
Yeah. Samantha Robinson's eye makeup deserves its own Academy Award. I agree. Yeah.
Truth.
Yeah. The blue eyeshadow is something that very few can pull off.
Well, people,
I mean, all of her makeup's fantastic in this. She looks fucking amazing in this film.
Yeah, I feel like the wingtips, like when people try to do that, like a lot of people I feel like just don't have a steady hand, and it's like,
or eye shape, like I've seen enough hooded, like here's how you could do a wing liner with hooded eyes. I'm like, sorry, I can't. No matter how, I can't. Also too, Luigi Mangione wrote this review.
Free Luigi. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised, like if Luigi Mangione had waited like a year, he would definitely have a letterbox, and I would definitely, because he had a Goodreads account, and like,
are we sure he doesn't have a letterboxed account and he's just keeping that one safe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's they're gonna bring it out at trial when they're like, this guy doesn't seem like the guy. They're like, oh, I'll just wait for his letterbox reviews.
And it's that one.
Pretty Women Killing Men is my favorite genre of film. Yeah.
She doesn't a lot of the killing is not purposeful. I mean, she purposely does kill Griff in the end, but Griff rejected her. So, you know, there you go.
He's asking for it.
It's like they just can't handle it. They just.
He was afraid he was going to drown in estrogen. That's essentially drowning in estrogen.
His voiceover, he's like, oh, a lot of guys get into pussy and then they fuck up and I'm not going to be that guy. And it's like, all right, calm down, buddy. Not that many people, you know. He's like, I'm getting so horny, I'm going to punch a black guy. And it's like, calm down, buddy.
Don't be clipping that out, guys. She does it for the girls and the gays. That's it.
I'm surprised there isn't like a gay character in this.
I feel like I feel like this movie would have definitely like benefited from having like a corgi gay psychic or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It's like Elaine.
Like what? Wait, no. What about the gothic guy from Jennifer's Body? He would have fit well in this movie, I think.
She needed a gay Renfield.
It's good they didn't have a Jerry though.
What zero dick does to an MF.
Or at least what bad dick does to an MF. Like the first two guys are like, you know that they're not throwing pipe. But then maybe Griff. I don't know. she goes crazy because Griff was too good. Yeah, maybe she's the gay character.
Yeah.
This is a lot closer to Eileen Wuornos than we thought.
Yeah.
There were so many things that I wanted to put as the background, but I didn't know whether Twitch would like ding or YouTube would ding us for having the drawing of boobs in her apartment.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, she looks great in this outfit.
I know, like the pose and everything.
We got to bring back those hats.
Yes.
Yeah. You probably have to go to Anna Miller and have her make
flower on it. Technically, a black rose.
She did. Feathers. She handmade so many of these costumes. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But too bad she's a turf.
I know. So many women are just one personality disorder away from becoming witches. Agreed. Yeah. That's it.
They even say it in this, right? They're like,
BPD. You know,
yeah, they're like, the end of the Griff's like, you're not a, you're just a borderline personality disorder.
Yeah, what you call is borderline personality disorder. Yeah,
I have borderline personality disorder. I can get an introduction to like witchcraft kit on Amazon. I'm gonna do it.
I do feel like there's a lot of Wiccans with borderline personality disorder, and probably bipolar too.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we all just know this made Quentin Tarantino insanely horny.
Look, there's this movie called The Love Witch. And in this movie, this witch bewitches people, men, and the men really fall in love with her. And all of a sudden, it's a coked out Tarantino.
And he randomly drops the N-word, you know?
Tarantino and Paul Thomas Anderson trying to lecture over Fiona Apple about the Love Witch.
Oh, God.
Hey, every time I see that, I share it every single time I see the Fiona Apple quit cocaine after spending one night listening to Paul Thomas Anderson and Quentin Tarantino talk about movies.
Yeah.
I don't blame her. But these are Letterboxd one-liners for the Love Witch Baby. You can follow Forrest and always Flacco, and he's logging in a bunch of stuff, usually stuff that we've covered and other things, because he's a cinephile.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I'm on the cinephile registry.
Yeah, and of course Conan, who's not here because he's on tour. You can find him at Conutron, right? And he's almost done with the Criterion Challenge, I think.
Yeah, he's at least keeping up with it. He's doing good on that.
Yeah, yeah. You can find.
I saw him on tour. You should too.
Yes.
Yeah. How was it?
It was good. Great.
Nice. And you could follow me at Christina. I'm logging in stuff every now and then. I'm going to be logging in more stuff, like my take on the Springsteen biopic, and also soon enough, Wicked for Good, and other stuff I'm going to be watching. Thursday night, my mom and I are watching Sinners for, you know, Mischief Night. Because that's, you know.
Well,
Josh, you're on Letterboxd too, right?
I sure am. On all of the social media platforms, I'm Old Man Dugan. I've got two podcasts, Unkind Rewind and Munch My Benson, both of which are on all of the social media platforms like that, though I don't really use Twitter anymore. I'd love to not have to use social media at all, but whatever.
Yeah, I think about that all the time. I'm like,
except for Letterboxd, I genuinely enjoy.
Yeah,
that's pretty much the only one. I'm okay with Blue Sky. Every other one is a real
it's
problem.
Boring. Blue Sky's just boring.
Blue Sky's boring, but at least it's not like just like the algorithm for like Threads and Instagram. Both of those, Instagram's just like 2/3 ads and forced
and whatever whatever people post from TikTok.
I do think it's very funny that all the good advertisers have pulled out of Twitter at this point. So the ads you get are legitimately psychotic. It's the one that I keep getting is like the Freedom Center, and it's like here's why Hamas needs to understand that Hamas needs to go, and it's like, okay, but like, what can I do about that? Why are you telling me about that? Like, what do you like? People love to be like, oh, go tell Hamas, let the hostages go. It's like, do you think I know them? Do you think I have any?
Still on MySpace. Oh man, MySpace, the good old days. Tom should have bought Facebook. He had the opportunities, and he said no. And I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, well,
we're on coding.
It probably sucked to be.
Oh, Friendster! Wow.
Facebook Tom, peeping Tom.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm the only guy still on Friendster.
I can't believe it's still around.
But yeah. We're about to drop the last episode of season 3 of Unkind Rewind, but.
Let me queue up plugs real quick. All right, sure. we got this, and then I got you. If you're watching us on YouTube, please like and subscribe, and then hit the bell to get notified whenever we're streaming. And we'd humbly request that you watch the video to the end, because it helps us with the algorithm and helps more film fans to discover the show. We're also monetized. If you want to get your chat questions definitely read on stream, you can always send us a super chat, which will help us keep the show going. Every cent helps. If you're watching on Twitch, you can gift us a free sub on Amazon Prime with your Prime membership, but getting subs on Twitch is always appreciated, and it helps to follow us on there as well. We also have an audio feed, which is available wherever you download podcasts, if you prefer to listen to podcasts rather than watch the stream. That's updated usually the same day we stream, but watching on YouTube and Twitch is the best way to get the show first, live as it happens. If you want to support us with a monthly donation and get access to all of our after parties forever, which go patron only after we do them, you can become a patron at patreon.com/movienightextra. Link is in the description for that. It really helps us keep the show going, since we do have some expenses to make this happen. We also have a Discord community. Link is in the description for that. We sometimes watch movies we cover on there. We get into conversations about everything from film to TV shows to related podcasts. We even have a Discord channel for memes. It's really fun on there. You can find us on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, Twitter, and Threads. You connect with us on all of those. Talk to us. We'd love to hear from you. Lastly, we recently made a TikTok at Movie Night Extra, where we're putting up short-form clips from the episodes. Okay, passing this to Conan so he can tell you about his music and this week's Protonic Reversal. Conan, who's on Protonic this week?
All right, obviously Conan's not here, but yeah, I guess his tour is over, but his next leg of the tour is November 13th, 15th, 16th, 17th, and is going to be in Kansas City on the 13th, Jackson, Mississippi on the 14th, Atlanta on the 15th, New Orleans on the 16th, Austin on the 17th, Denton on the 18th. So he's going around the South and like the Midwest, and then he's going west to Arizona and Los Angeles, and so he's going to be doing that in November and December. But right now, you know, I think his tour is over, so he's going to be back on Friday when we talk about Weapons. Which Christina, yeah. have you seen Weapons again since it came on HBO Max?
Yes.
Yeah, I just watched it the other night and was like, I made the mistake of watching it at 4 a.m.
Oh God. I watched it the first episode of It, Welcome to Derry. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do it.
We've talked about the story of me seeing it finally. It was the day after my birthday. I was hungover as shit. And it was mm-hmm. it was 1:30 or whatever, 12:30 in the afternoon. So I was hungover the day after my birthday in Philly, and we saw it like first thing in the morning, and I was just sitting there. And I had like acid reflux. I was like, and I was like, I'm not ready to be scared this early but I made it through. But yeah, watching it at 4 a.m. It's one of those movies that, like, I don't know, like you go outside and it's like you're in like a, you know, somewhat like suburban or not suburban, but like, you know, just a nice neighborhood, and it's still creepy. It's like, there's a lot of movies where you're like, well, at least I'm not, you know, in the location of it. But then you're like, yeah. I literally live on a cul-de-sac. So it's like, but Christina, what did you have going on? We were just on the Zoran Mamdani debate panel. That was fun.
Yeah, it was ten of us and counting.
We had to keep Josh, you know about this space? We're on there right now, but.
It's a working class leftist media collective. We're working on making it a 24/7 thing. So maybe
I've heard podcast. This before on
yeah. Yeah, it's cool. I love it.
So they had a thing where they invited pretty much anybody that's kind of, you know, a content creator that's in their circle, but they sent out the link to go on when they had the Zoran and Cuomo debate and, you know, Sliwa, and we all kind of piled in, and we were just switching out. Like, they would, like, one person would go on and then the next person would go on, and, like, you know, we'd have to switch out.
We're all still like in this chat because we only have like 10 people at a time on StreamYard. We look like Hollywood like squares at the end.
I was first on and you were like, let me in.
It was funny. I think we're gonna do election night coverage for the mayoral New York City race, so that should be fun too.
I think it's the day after we do Mildred Pierce, I think I want to say. But
because we're doing Noir November next week. I'm still streaming on Twitch. Last night we did a double feature. We watched The Phantom of the Paradise because it's Halloween week, and we watched Phantom of the Paradise and Sweeney Todd. Y'all know I love that musical. Favorite Tim Burton movie. Great adaptation of a great stage show. Also today on The Space, I was on with Alex and Visora. We were just talking about movies, TV, scary stuff, and also Alex went to his first political rally for Zoran. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
I'm like, your first political rally ever? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, you live in New York City. How is this possible? But again, no unaspiring candidates.
He doesn't strike me as someone who until pretty recently was it feels like, you know, he did a good job like kind of hosting that panel though. He felt like they kept him in charge for whatever reason.
Well, yeah, that's what Matt was saying too. I mean, he has the chops to be a producer too. Good for him. But yeah, he kind of got Emma's attention. They actually talked about him because he was wearing his Max Left hat.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Which is very cool. And so yeah, it was fun, talking, I remember my first political rally, of course, it was for Bernie. It was a big thing. And I'm like, yeah, you're with a lot of people that you end up, talking to, sharing camaraderie with. It's always a good feeling to when you go to like a political rally, but except for Kathy Hochul hearing go Bills and not tax the rich.
I haven't gotten to go to any of the ones this year, but the best one I ever went to wasn't the first one by any means, but the best one I ever went to was right after Bernie had his heart attack. And he was like,
I had one too
a little while. So I went to the one where he first came out. He was back on the campaign trail.
People showed up or whatever, right?
It's the one in Queens where he was endorsed by AOC. And everybody was there. It was so packed.
Yeah, hope.
And AOC came out and was like, I endorse Bernie. And the crowd went wild. And I was like, I was so amped up. And then Bernie comes out and everyone's like, And he's like, distant or whatever. And he's like, oh, I'm here.
We were live streaming that at the office, at the Bernie office. When I saw Bernie opened up his South Carolina like headquarters in Columbia, so we all went there. It was right after his heart attack too, and he looked good because everyone's like, wow, his selfie he took of him, he looks good. Because I was like right there live streaming it on Facebook, and I got all my right wing fans saying, this is how fascism comes into our country. And I'm like, block, get away. I'm having fun. And then I was like, Bernie, selfie. He's like, yeah. He's like, he's like, you're familiar. I'm like, I've been to live your rallies in Aiken and Augusta, Georgia. You gave me a sweaty hug. He's like, oh yeah.
Really. you look familiar. I don't know, but I've seen you somewhere before.
I've been to like 5 or 6 Bernie rallies. He should know me by now. I don't recommend volunteering for a Bernie rally because when I was in charge of sitting people behind the press at a big rally at USC Aiken, and we had to reserve for like last minute staggers, and like nobody listened to me. I'm like, you don't want to sit right behind the press because you're not going to see him. And then they bitched to me afterwards. I'm like, you should listen to me.
the first one I ever went to was right after Bernie dropped out, like literally within the weeks of Bernie dropping out, he came to New Paltz for some reason in the park, and he like rallied people in the park. At least this is the first one I went to like as an adult on my own, like without family. And like, I just remember walking from my apartment was on one side of the park, and then the college was on the other side of the park, and I was walking to class, had no idea this was even happening. And then I just see Bernie like standing on the thing, and I'm like, Bernie, and he's like rallying everyone, and I was like, oh, like
when he came to my campaign office, because he specifically asked to have it at the office to show like the momentum that our office had, because we knock on the most doors in the state of South Carolina, and I was helping his team set up the podium. I'm like, could you take a photo of me at his podium? They're like, absolutely. So there's a few photos of me posing at the podium, and I'm like, oh yeah, I feel the burn.
but Josh, you're back with Munch My Benson. What's going on? How's it going?
So we're back. We are sort of altering the release schedule to accommodate my co-host having two fucking children.
Don't recommend that.
Yeah. Especially trying to do that and podcasting when you don't have someone else editing your stuff. We're doing every other week, and then in the intervening weeks in between, we drop an old episode that's been paywalled. We also we're going to start doing more bonus content. Just freeing ourselves from watching fucking, at least an SVU every week. That pod's really fun. That's the bigger podcast that I do. And then Unkind Rewind is still growing. We're about to Thursday, we drop the final episode of season 3, which is going to be on Robin Hood, the animated Robin Hood. And then Sean and I will do like at least a monthly sort of bonus episode in between the seasons. But we should start dropping season 4 in January. So
we're Christina's got to go on Unkind Rewind because I've been on, Conan's been on.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem is I've seen like almost every movie from my childhood. Yeah. So it's like, it's hard for me to pick a movie that I haven't seen.
So we did an episode. I forget which episode it was after. I had to figure this out, and it took me like a long time to try to figure out something that I hadn't seen before, like that I hadn't seen since childhood. I finally banged out just a list of like 10. But there's the Jimmy Kimmel Jimmy Kimmel picture. Yeah. Named after
basically a 3-minute ad on ABC on primetime.
Yeah.
Have you gotten a boost? Did you get a boost?
Somewhat. It's that I don't think that there are many people who are seeking out podcasts who are also watching network television during primetime hours.
I mean, if your podcast had come about in like 1999, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire would be like, oh yeah, we do this.
Oh yeah, and this is at least celebrity. You know, it was Birbiglia and Atsuko were the two contestants, and so, you know, it was celebrity. Mm-hmm. More people are going to watch that than something else than normal Millionaire. But
for the first comment, Conan going, "Holy crap!" with a fire sign on. But yeah, so we're gonna do an after party after this. You know, we're gonna do the Love Witch after party. But you know,
we're gonna go to the Love Witch baby.
The Love Witch baby. Do you have any final thoughts? Anything we didn't get to?
I think Samantha Robinson is incredible in this.
Yeah.
I think it can't be understated how much she nails this. And if she's not like pitch perfect, this movie doesn't get pulled off, and she absolutely is.
I was trying to think, is there one other, like, is there anyone else that I could see pulling this off? The only person that I thought of that kind of popped into my brain was Alison Brie. I could see kind of doing a movie like, because she kind of has
that face.
Yeah.
Something could be unsettling about her face if she gives like the right like facial expressions.
And she's just kind of out of time enough that I think maybe she could, but I don't think anyone could do it better than Samantha Robinson.
Well, yeah. And she has that weird transatlantic accent thing going.
Yeah.
That's just natural of, like, for her.
Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like
Samantha Robinson has a transatlantic. Obviously, yeah. Alison Brie from Pasadena or whatever.
But. Yeah. By the way, the one thing that I wanted to say before jumping to Christina is so it was the last film I think to cut an original camera negative on 35 millimeter. So basically it was the last film that they can really think of with that 35 millimeter film stock where they actually edited it by hand. Instead of doing it with a digital intermediary, which is like, you know, Premiere or Avid or any kind of computer program. So literally they went, I mean, the reason that took so long to, you know, I think to create it, or one of the reasons, they had to actually edit it through the film stock rather than doing it on a computer, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Christina, final thoughts, anything we didn't get to?
I love this movie so much. It's a great good for her film. If you're into witches, this is a movie you definitely should see. And also if you are someone who hates how shit cinematography has become these days, this is your film.
Yeah, they did it through an oscilloscope laboratory, which
it reminded me of Dark Shadows, because that was also what it was also like the last soap opera to be filmed in kaleidoscope.
I was thinking not just Dark Shadows, but just like soap operas in general, right? Like the reason that they have so many unknown kind of actors or actors from NCIS, like that's kind of what the woman's pictures became, was like
Jeffrey. I remember him playing Carlos Rivera on General Hospital. He was a hitman for a rival mob boss for Sonny Corinthos, and he got shot and he was a ghost, and then he actually wasn't dead, but then he got killed off for real. He was on the soap opera for 3 years.
That was the guy that played Griff.
Then he played his good twin brother.
That was the guy that played Griff.
Wayne Peters.
Oh, Wayne Peters. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Griff, Jean Keys is actually, he's mostly a model, and he's done a lot of modeling for romance novel covers.
That's
Fabio.
He's
like some guy who would also do like those vertical dramas that I'm addicted to. Sure. That I see. those are the films that people are like, oh, you know, you have to be, if you're on your phone, you know, they basically explain you the plot the entire time and nothing makes sense.
Well, TV's becoming more like that. They have the thing where it's like, oh, they have to be designed so that if people are on their phones, they can still follow the plot. And it's like, this sucks. This medium
sucks.
That's
what's killing movie theaters, not the popcorn bucket.
That's the second time I've had that conversation right there in the last 2 days.
Well, they had that clip of Jamila Jamil, who another problematic person that I kind of like listening to talk.
Wow, I liked her talk about the pill and all that.
She's not like transphobic, but she has like a lot of weird opinions that she'll just spout.
It's about her big problematic stuff is about body image issues.
Yeah. Because she had them, and it's like, can you really get mad at somebody for, you know, that kind of thing? Like, people really do, but I don't know. Before he became, like, before we all knew he was like a pretty much a rapist, like, I always felt like she was kind of female Russell Brand before we knew the bad stuff about him. You know what I mean? Like, they both had zero filter to like anything that they said. But yeah, so she was the one, she had a clip that went viral that she was talking about how, you know, they essentially make it so that every time you write a show now, it's like, oh, people have to be able to like understand the plot of this while they're watching.
There have to be
tell don't show
happening, that are happening so people hear them and register them while they're on their phones.
I'm sure also the old people sitting in a nursing home can follow along.
I've seen Passions.
Great conversations like this go on for an hour. Join us for an after party Friday. So Halloween, if you don't have any plans on Halloween, 8 p.m. same time.
Get dressed up.
As usual. We are going to, I wanted to find the costume. I wanted to find like the
old, orange like, wig and glasses.
Then I just didn't get around to it. But I thought it would be really funny to come on and like that with the jumpsuit and everything like the, you know, but maybe I will. I don't know. Who knows? Find out on Friday and join us for the after party. If you're on this space, thanks for joining us. You can go to the Movie Night Extravaganza channel, like, subscribe, and also we'll be on there as an after party. It's not going to be on this space. Sorry to tell you, but we're not going to keep them up that late.